Hey, everybody, happy Sunday. No advertisers in this episode. Only those of you that have supported us at charliekirk.com/support get shout-outs. That's right. Only those of you that have supported us. I want to thank Steve from Fort Wayne, Indiana, for supporting us. I want to thank Sam from Erda, Utah, for supporting us. I want to thank Delamon from Houston, Texas, for supporting us. Thank you. I want to thank Josh from Craston, Rhode Island, for supporting us. Alexa from Santa Rosa Beach for supporting us. Carol from Barnesville, Minnesota. I want to thank Susie from Illinois. I want to thank Lisa from Florida for supporting us. And Michael from Estes Park, Colorado. CharlieKirk.com/support. CharlieKirk.com/support is where you are able to get behind our work to reach millions of young people, or try to reach millions of young people every single month. CharlieKirk.com/support is the place to help make that happen. And if you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com, tpusa.com. There's a homeschooling revolution happening in America, and all of you can participate in it. This episode, it was a conversation I had in Murrieta, California, with a great man, Pastor Tim Thompson from 412 Church. Share this episode with your friends. Zero advertisers, so please consider supporting us and giving us the ability to keep fighting. When you support us, you let us to continue to grow, flourish, hire staff, and fight back. CharlieKirk.com/support. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
I am very happy to have you out here.
Thank you.
And
great to be here.
Yeah, I met you several years ago at the Unite IE Conservative Conference. It was out in Ontario, and it was me and Rob McCoy, who is your pastor, and Pastor Jack Hibbs, and we were the three pastors they had speaking at this conservative conference, and then there was you and Larry Elder, and gosh, there was so many people speaking at that, but it was just cool to get to meet you at that, and so for me to have you out tonight really is a pleasure and an honor, and love what you do. So thank you so much, and just glad
that
you're here.
It's great to be here, everybody. We're going to have some fun tonight, and we're going to talk about what you can do, not just what's wrong, because it drives me nuts. You go to an event. We're going to talk about what you can do to actually take back this country, which is what we need to talk about.
I love that. I'm a person of action myself. We can talk all day, but you got to actually put feet to your faith. And I've heard a lot of pastors say that you got to put feet to your faith. And then, like, I don't understand why aren't we putting feet to our faith? Let's do something. And I want to ask you, because you are younger than me. I actually have a grandkid on the way now. I'm excited about that. But you just got married in May. Congratulations to you and your wife. I know what motivates me, but I want to know what motivates you, because this has gone on for quite some time in your life. You've been engaged in this. What keeps you motivated?
Yeah, I mean, the most important thing in my life is my relationship with Jesus Christ and my relationship with God, which we need to remind ourselves of that every single day and say it out loud and say it clearly, because that's really what's going on here, isn't it? It's a spiritual war. All of this material side of it is just the manifestation of unclean spirits and pure spirits that are going at it. And that's what the scriptures tell us. But when it comes to what I care about in the political domain, I believe the scriptures tell us that we need to care about things that are beautiful and good and that are true. This is the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. And I am 27 years old, and I say that I want you to think tonight as we go through this, how much we've seen our country change just in the last 9 months, and especially how much we've seen our country change in the last 9 years or 10 years. When I was in high school 10 years ago, the things that we've now seen implemented would be completely unthinkable now that we just take as just kind of common sense, as it's anything but common sense, but they say it's just kind of normal things, the new normal. And I'm frustrated in a lot of different ways, and it compels me to action because I will not sit idly by while this gift that we have been given, the greatest country ever to exist, a constitutional republic of and by and for the people that so many people have sacrificed for, that I just have to sit idly by while a very sinister and malevolent and clever and crafty minority takes over this country while they do not control a majority of the people. And by every single measure, they are only doing it because we've allowed them to do it. And now maybe not you, but that we have allowed them to get way too far as cultural control, way too far for way too long. And they've also been willing, which is a word I want to talk about tonight, to get into the institutions, to push against conservatives and Christians. And look, as a 27-year-old, I know this, and this is hard for some people to hear, and I'm going to be very honest with you because I don't do hopium. I don't tell you hope, opium, put together, things that sound good. Like, this is not going to get fixed for probably another 20 years, just so you guys know. This is a 20 or 30-year project. Now, things can get better. We can hopefully get Fauci to go to prison and, like, all these things that can happen, right? But if you really think we're going to reform the FBI, the CIA, Congress, which is a waste of rations, Sacramento, which makes Congress look like, you know, a darling child of American government, we have to think how the left thought in the 1960s, which is an intergenerational project of 27-year-olds that are going to say, you know what? This is now my life task. By the time I'm 50, I want to be able to look at a 27-year-old and say, you know what? I actually gave you something better. And I'm not saying this is a shame. I'm going to say something. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. But if you're 50 plus, you're not handing a better country to your kids. It's not necessarily your fault, but it's just true. And I know for me, my life's mission is to hand something better to the 27-year-old that's going to be sitting in this chair in 25 years from now.
Right. Yeah. A friend of mine, former California State Senator Mike Morrell, just a good, godly man, very few of them on the California State Senate. But Senator Morrell, he had said, you know, Tim, you know, the Bible does say that we leave an inheritance to our children's children.
Yeah.
And he said, it's far more than money. We need to leave an America to our children's children, the America that we got to grow up in. And I heard you speak to the kids next door, and I'd love you to just tell the parents here, because I want you to tell the parents what you told their kids, because they need to hear it too. Yeah. And I think, and this is serious. Like, if you were a parent and your kids were over there, I think Charlie gave them some of the best advice they could have gotten this year, hands down. So thank if you would, just
yeah,
share
I mean,
that.
It's. I was a little disappointed, to be honest. I asked a lot of the kids that were like 12 and 13, I said, how many of you have phones? And every hand went up. And that's really bad. I'll be honest with you guys. No person should have a phone until they're 18, if at that. And I'm not trying to make you feel bad, but I grew up without one. And it was one of the greatest gifts from God that I grew up without a smartphone, like this weird, creepy window into TikTok controlling your children. It's easy to give your child a phone because it keeps them entertained and you don't actually have to worry about what they're doing half the time. I asked them, I said, how long do you guys spend on your phones? They're like, oh, 6 hours, 7 hours. I said, you guys should smash your phones. I'm not kidding. And I'm happy to get into this on how I think technology has really played a role. I had a reporter once, they say, you're anti-technology. I was like, yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, I mean, am I anti-smartphone? I mean, I'm anti what it's made us become, of course. And we know so little about the neuroscience of what this does to our interpersonal relationships, to spiritual development, to mental health. And so I challenged them provocatively because it gets young people's attention because we're competing for attention with students, right? Because they're on TikTok all the time, and which is a disastrous Chinese spy operation that has mined all your children's data. And they all have it, right? I asked them, and they were like, oh, yeah, we use it. I was like, oh, my gosh. I just told them, I said, get off the phone and start living in the real world. I mean, I lived in America 10 years ago where my parents were like, okay, be home by dark. And they looked at me as if I had, like I was a relic from the Inquisition or something. They're like, you fought in the Crusades? Like, what was Jesus like? I mean, it's 10 years ago. And again, I'm not trying to make people feel bad. That's not why I'm here, okay? But I love you guys too much to lie to you, okay? If you're a parent and you have a 15 or 16-year-old with a phone, take the phone away, seriously. Your kids will hate you short-term. They'll thank you long-term. They should not have a phone. And you're like, well, I have to stay in contact with my kid, which again, is this new weird like helicopter parenting thing. You don't. But if you have to, go buy him a Jitterbug, okay? Which is like that big phone where they have like three buttons and like it's not, it's like 911, the hospital, and your grandparents and your parents. And like, that's it, right? You guys ever see those commercial? Or like get them a Life Alert, okay? Or something like that, right? I mean, seriously, they don't need the phone. And I say this as somebody who has kind of built our following on social media. It's all a pile of garbage. And it's creating a generation that doesn't know how to lead, that doesn't know how to communicate, that is more likely to be socially controlled. And so I know for my wife and I, one of the things I think we as Christians need to do a better job of is honoring the Sabbath. And so for one day a week, we just turn off our phone completely, put it away. And you know, I try to only use my phone for, I got rid of all my social media apps, my Instagram, my Twitter, my Facebook, YouTube, everything. I just have text message and email, and I try to limit my screen time to an hour and a half or less. And I fail a lot. And, you know, it could be good if you're reading the Bible app, which, by the way, I can't stand, you know, when people say, take out your Bibles, and I speak at churches. I'm a big, like, physical Bible believer. That's a different speech for a different time. But I will say, though, that I'm happy to go into what else I told the kids, but I also told them that it's very tempting. It's a temptation I have to reject. I'm going to be honest with you, to blame my parents' generation for this. It's tempting for me to want to go on an anti-boomer crusade, mm-hmm. right? Which is the most selfish generation in American history. It just is. But everything shows it. Boomers are willing to lock down schools because they don't want to get sick with their kids, willing to mask kids and vaccinate kids. Not you, of course, but you know, That 70% of boomers support this stuff, right? I told them, don't fall into that temptation that I want to get into. Lead your parents. Lead adults to go forth in the country you want to live in. Do not be the victim generation. And by the way, I wrestle with this, right? And I'm sure some of you do too, right? Some of you are like, why is it that this country was not what it once was? Well, that's where God put you. Guess what? The country I grew up in, where we used to judge people based on character, it's over. We're now judging people on skin color. And it's not going to go back in any major institution anytime. The country that I grew up in, where all of a sudden we valued hard work and American history, it's dead. We got to bring it back. It's going to take work. We can complain about it. We can blame people for it. I got a long list, by the way. Not helpful. Instead, I told every student there, I said, you now have to ask yourself, what kind of country do you want to live in? Do you want to live in a country where it's easier to have a large family and church attendance is going up and there's a spiritual revival and our constitutional rights are protected? Yes. Or a country where you are micromanaged by some sort of weird 5'8" tech billionaire that controls TikTok in Silicon Valley and that you're a slave to the mask tyrants and the vaccine pharmaceutical companies? They didn't want any of that. I said, think freely, be courageous, and together our generation can build a better country.
Amen. You know, I obviously I grew up where we were all outside as well. I always tell people we drank out of the hose, and I wondered my brother.
So did I. It was great.
Yeah,
it's
why?
Fine.
I always wondered
now
why
like, you're going to get cancer. Like, oh,
why did I drink out of the hose? You know why we drank out of the hose? Because if we went inside to get a drink, our mom made us stay in. So we just stayed outside so she couldn't find us. But I grew up in this time, you know, Southern California was like this area, especially Orange County where I grew up, was a big punk rock area. And we always see, I was never a punk rocker, but I always watched the punk rockers at school. And I always thought, man, there's something so cool about these guys. Like they do not do what the culture tells them to do. And I thought that's kind of awesome that they're that way. And the way I look at it now is today to be a conservative, to be a Christian, to go counterculture, you are punk rock. You're punk rock if you do that. We've got Victoria sitting right over there. Victoria, you are punk rock. If you guys don't, stand up real quick, Victoria. Stand up real quick. Victoria, okay, so Victoria went to school. Shame on you. She went to school without a mask. So her school went on lockdown. Lockdown. Like there's a man with a gun on campus who went on lockdown, and then she ends up on Tucker Carlson. Good job. Good job. I do too. That's great. Yeah.
No, and I mean, it's you're right. It's kind of like the new rebel is to be a Christian conservative. But that whole kind of punk rock thing was always somewhat a lie, because deep down it was all kind of a character trope that was being played by Hollywood, as it was like the fake rebel. Like, yeah, like, oh yeah, I reject the society, even though every song that I like agrees with me, and you know, every movie, because I mean, you kind of strike me as someone who, you know, grew up in the late 80s and 90s and early 2000s, kind of that era. A lot of those movies were kind of all about kind of the punk rock thing. None of our movies today are about Christians conservatives. I could tell you that, right? I mean, this is what I always laugh about, like the hippies always being called like the rebels. It's like, yeah, I guess they were rebels, but they controlled every major cultural institution, right? It's like that hippies were glorified in every song and every movie as being like the cool people. And so I'll tell you, a legit rebel is someone who like gets fired from your job and gets called a racist and a bigot because you believe Jesus Christ is the king of the world. So it's like, it's you know what I mean? It's like an even bigger level. And so, I agree. It's, you know, people say conservatives are the new punk rock, and, you know, you articulated it really well, but it's a whole new level, because the price of speaking truth in America today has never come at a higher cost. And it's never come at a higher cost to just say things that are objectively true. And the Bible tells us that these times are coming. The Bible tells us that this sort of persecution is guaranteed for us, and we need to embrace it, and that, you know, we shouldn't stay away from it, and we shouldn't act as if, you know, the moment that we are in is something that we need to complain about. With that being said, we should not tolerate injustice. We should not tolerate evil where it rears its head. And that is what we as Christians and conservatives are called to do.
Right. Yeah, amen. So you have a heart to reach out to the younger generation, and I love that about what you do. And you did encourage, like you always do, you encouraged our kids next door to not go to college, most of them.
Right.
And I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'll let you explain why just briefly, because there might be some parents that just had a freak out moment.
There's some things. I mean, I'm not running for political office. I do a talk show for 3 hours a day, 2 podcasts a day. I just don't care if people don't agree with me. It's kind of fun. It's really liberating. You guys should try it sometime. It's really great. It's like, yeah, whatever. Someone heckled me. They're like, how dare you? I'm like, really? All the things I say, like, you know, the things I say about Islamic fundamentalism and like immigration and abortion, the thing that gets audiences so fired up is when I tell them that their kids shouldn't go to college. It's like the Greta Thunberg. Like, how dare you? Like, great. Like, yeah, now I really know what your religion is. Your religion is social currency. And your religion is driving around with the Stanford Mom bumper sticker on your Lexus on the way to SoulCycle, being like, yeah, my kid's such a good person. You see how good of a parent I am? My kid goes to Stanford. Look how good of a person I am. Yeah, okay, great. Okay. I mean, no offense. If you think college is great, terrific. I'll persuade you otherwise in 2 minutes or less. Which is like, look, we have way too many kids going to college. Way too many kids going to college. 41% of kids that go to college don't graduate. 41%. If I told you that if we all go to McDonald's after this and 41% of you are going to get food poisoning, that's going to dramatically alter your life, and you're going to leave with $30,000 in debt, you'd be like, man, that restaurant sounds horrible. Yet we keep on sending our kids to those colleges. Why do we have a generation of kids that hate the country, don't know the Lord, and don't know their own identity? We send them to factories where they masterclass that. Right. And then we're like, you know what's a good idea? It's so expensive. Let's have you borrow money you don't have to study things that don't matter, to go find jobs that don't exist, where 90% of the college graduates end up finding jobs if they find a job at all, and some that has no relevancy to their degree or major at all whatsoever. And they're like, you know what's even a better idea? Let's go surround them with college professors who hate themselves and hate America, and have super like long words to try to overly complicate things. Like, oh yeah, I believe in like international nihilism, or I'm going to tell you why America's colonialistic, heteronormatively oppressive. And it's like, wow. And then we decided, you know what, even more, we have 22 million kids in college right now. Way too many kids, right? And they said, you know what, we're going to go create majors. You know, it's really fun. You guys should try this. And if you work at Starbucks, God bless you. You might not be one of these people, but most of them are. It's like, oh yeah. So you're like, thank you so much for, you know, my iced coffee. What did you study? Right. And I got all sorts of different answers. Like, yeah, you know, I studied North African lesbian poetry. I'm like, really? That's, you know, who's your favorite North African lesbian poet? I didn't realize that was such a, you know, diverse field of study. I studied like 13th century Peruvian, duck hunting. I'm like, yeah, it's really something. So, has it made America a better place? Of course not. You have a generation that has, on average, $35,000 in student loan debt. They're living in urban cities where they're renting, not owning. The amount of children we're having is declining. We have more single people than married people. They're less likely to go to church. They've declared war on their parents' values. And why? College. That's why. And why do we keep sending our kids to college? Number one, false promise. They don't need to go to college to get a job. It's a lie. It is a total lie. They need to get to college to go work for some soulless company that's going to suck their life away. Like, oh yeah, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Facebook, Google, IBM. Yeah, fine. But do you know where the job openings are right now? You know the people who are killing it? The people that are laughing? I had a plumber come to my house the other day. They need to be investigated for price gouging, okay? No, serious. By the way, if you're a plumber, I hope you're charging these people that money. Any plumbers here, God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. You guys are heroes. Because they get to go to the ruling class homes of all the people that have, like, the Stanford mom bumper stickers. And they have, like, the 27-year-old sleeping until 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the couch as the plumber comes in, right? And the plumber goes into the basement, fix the problem. And then they're the one that has to, like, overhear the conversations of the mom being like, what are you doing with your life and all that? Meanwhile, the plumber's like, should have been a plumber. And he can't go hire enough people to go help them because no one wants their kids to go work construction. Because deep down, you would rather tell your friends at SoulCycle or the country club or whatever. Oh, no. Little Johnny's at UC Berkeley. He's at Arizona State. Deep down, you don't want to tell your friends, oh yeah, my kid's working construction. That's considered a failure. That's considered like you didn't do your job. You would rather send your kid to a soulless and godless institution where they don't know the Lord and they come back, you know, for Thanksgiving like, hey honey, how was your first semester? I don't believe this is Indigenous Peoples Day, not Thanksgiving, okay? I am non-binary and I totally reject the heteronormative type. You know what? I reject all of this. And 90% taxes for you. You're like, what just happened? Am I paying for this? Yes, you are. And so it is one of the greatest scams ever pulled on the American people. And no one wants to talk about it. And I found this really interesting. One of the reasons people don't want to talk about it is they've either gone through the system and they have some sort of like weird guilt about it. I'm free. I never went to college. It was a great blessing for me. I was going to go to West Point, didn't get in. I didn't want to borrow the money. It was great. My parents played along with the whole thing. God bless them for that. Because where I came from, like the drug addicts were treated way better than the kids that didn't go to college, right? You guys all know those types of neighborhoods, right? Where it's like, okay, you could be the total social isolate, but if you don't go to college, you get a talk from the elders in the community, right? Are you okay? You do know the mistake you're making, right? You must go to college to succeed. You need to go to college. You know, being kind of at the higher level of my class and, you know, being involved in sports and Eagle Scout, like not going to college was considered to be an act of like unheard of rebellion. And so, yeah, look, we're going to save the country if we can reduce college enrollment by half. These are broken institutions that rip you off if you're paying tuition, that scam your kids, that scam the taxpayers, where these professors are making out like wild bandits, and they create voters like AOC. Time to stop sending your kids to college and to say, okay, if they want to go to college, they can become a dentist. Specialized skills are one thing, okay? But guess what? Most kids don't go to college for that. Most 70% of kids go to college to go study communications or psychology. And I say this as we run a college organization with many of our Turning Point kids here tonight. And they will tell you that, like, look, most of the classes that they're forced to take, they don't want to take. They don't have any relevancy to their degree or major. So like, okay, we're going to go make you take all this kind of social, you know, justice core so we can indoctrinate you and go get you further into debt, which makes you more reliable voters, by the way. The higher your debt level, the more likely you are to go vote for the person that might alleviate that debt burden, right? If you're free and you don't have any debt, then you're not going to be a Democrat voter, obviously, right? So you go send people into the system where they're filled with these ideas and they're shackled with this financial burden. And so, yeah, just think for yourself. Ask high school kids, hey, what do you want to do with your life? Not where do you want to go to college? What kind of person do you want to be? Let's develop people with character, right? Let's talk about a properly souled individual that knows the meaning of courage and justice and love and mercy and contemplation and friendship and assembly. Not someone who can recite to you how racist and misogynistic and colonialistic America is. So reject the system. Think freely. And your kids, I'm telling you, they'll be so blessed if you start to think like this, and a pressure will be lifted off your house. And maybe it is the right choice for you, but I'm telling you, many people are stuck in that matrix, that simulation, and it doesn't end up making good decisions.
Right, right. There are some that are in there that are awesome, like you just said. You got Turning Point group here tonight. I want to show a quick video. Kiara Mapp, she goes to church at 412 Church in Marietta. She's she's a fourth-year political science major at San Diego State University, where she is the president of the Turning Point USA chapter there, also the Students for Life. And she went before the city council meeting here in Temecula, just one city south of us. And I just want to show you a quick clip, and then I want to talk about this for a minute.
Awesome. So much that we can do, but I will leave you with a quote from Frederick Douglass. Where justice is denied, where poverty is enforced, where ignorance prevails, and where any one class is made to feel that society is an unorganized conspiracy to oppress, rob, and degrade them, neither persons nor property will be safe. Please stop telling underrepresented groups that they are victims and let us all be victors. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a white liberal stare.
Go ahead.
No, I'm going to post that on our social media, so make sure I get a clip of that.
Yeah.
No, I just love kind of how the white liberals are perplexed, like, oh, really? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny because that meeting, I was there until 3:30 in the morning.
Wow.
That's how long the city council meeting went. It has to do with the Ready Commission that Temecula put into place. And, the Ready Commission stands for race, equity. I was going to say equality, but it's not equality. It's equity. Race, equity, diversity, and inclusion. And here's the city council going, it has nothing to do with race. I don't know why you keep saying that. Like, okay, ready, the first letter is race. But this has nothing to do. Then they start talking critical race theory, and we keep bringing this up. They go, well, I don't know what you're talking about. This has nothing to do with critical race theory. And it's like, you don't know what critical race theory is. And then along comes Kiara Mapp. She gets up there and she just schools them. And it was awesome. It was one of those like times where you just can't help but like have tears of joy coming down your face. Especially like as a pastor, I'm like, oh, I know her. I know her. She's awesome. So it was so cool. And what I want to do is I want to find out, how do we replicate that? What do we do to engage more people in getting up? Because there are a lot of brilliant minds that need to be heard in this time. And the way the left is working, is though they think we're dumb. And that's how they act. They act like we're dumb. And then Kiara Mack gets up there and shows them, look, you guys are the ones that are fools.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, proud to say you're a president of a chapter, Turning Point USA. So that's why we do what we do, everybody. And very proud of that, seriously. And that touches me. That's why we started Turning Point, to try to rise up new leaders, to try to stand up against what we've been seeing in our country. I'm happy to talk about kind of the missing, and there's two missing ingredients right now. And I'm happy to say that used to be we had many missing ingredients. So when I first started Turning Point, we wouldn't have filled this room up if we said we were going to talk about what we're talking about tonight. Because there was not awareness and there really was not agreement amongst conservatives and Christians at how bad things were. And I'm talking about in 2012, 2013. You guys understand what we used to talk about at gatherings like this, right? We used to talk about like economic policy. Remember those gatherings? Like, oh yeah, we need to go lower taxes for the biggest companies because that's really going to get America back to where we need it to go, right? And look, I'm a free market guy, but it's definitely not the most important thing on the list right now. I mean, free markets are a means to an end so human beings can flourish. And if you do not have a decent or civil society, let alone a political project that's working with fair and free elections, what are we even talking about here, right? I mean, and so, but now we do have that awareness and that agreement. So now there's two things we're missing. And I think we're changing. And again, I don't mean this as an insult. So please just accept this as a general kind of thing. We need more courage, and we need the willingness, right? And so the courage is a very interesting thing. George S. Patton, who's one of my favorite all-time people, who was probably murdered by our own government, but that's a different question for a different time. It's true. And so probably, but you guys can look into the stats of it. It's well documented. He said that moral courage is the most necessary yet absent characteristic in men. Aristotle, who is the man, said that courage is the ultimate virtue because without it, there are no other virtues. And you think about that. That's exactly right. That if you don't have courage, then how can you have honesty? How can you have justice? How can you have friendship and contemplation? And courage is the virtue that allows the entire society to operate. That was courage to go speak at that school board meeting. But then it also took willingness, which is what you just talked about, Pastor, which is staying there till 3:30 in the morning. That's not fun, right?
Oh, no.
that's going to ruin your next day. They've been staying at meetings to 3:30 in the morning since the 1960s. You see, when they devised their takeover and their plot to take down America in the 1960s, they said, you know what? We're willing to get arrested. We're willing to protest. We are willing to create a secularized religion. We're willing to stay at these meetings till 3:30 because when you're conserving something, you don't operate with the same sense of urgency if you don't think it's immediately under threat. But if you're trying to revolutionize something, you will continue to work at it. Like, look at the people with the gate, with the whole homosexual marriage thing. They didn't stop. I mean, I'm thinking of writing an article about it because I lived through the whole homosexual marriage thing. And it was so amazing to see how America was so in agreement that a marriage was one man, one woman, like 60 to 70% at every poll. And in like 10 years or less, the courts, culture, and public opinion also changed. In like 10 years, and it shows that sometimes social change does not happen in a linear fashion. So for example, you could be working super hard on getting homosexual marriage passed from 1980 to 2005 and move the dial like 0.5% every year. But maybe once 2006 hits, for whatever reason, it goes by 10% every single year, right? And so we're at a moment right now where things can change very quickly. Right? People are seeing the injustice and they're seeing the immorality of what the current regime is doing. And so, yeah, then it comes down to the willingness. And here's something that you don't want to hear, but you need to hear, right? Which is that all of you are going to have to sacrifice something to get your country back. And a lot of you already are. You're going to sacrifice friends, business contracts, contacts, you know, neighborly relationships, all of it. And it is worth it. Trust me, it is worth it. But I'm not going to do what some other speakers do, which is lie to you, which is this. Just go vote for this person. We got to take back the House. And then just go buy a pillow and everything's going to be better, right? And like, promo code Kirk, by the way, at mypillow.com, okay? Mypillow.com, promo code Kirk, okay? Great guy, Mike Lindell. Love him. That's not going to save the Republic. I mean, the point is that we now have to all of a sudden embody a posture that we don't like. You know what that is? It's what we do at Turning Point. I travel 340 days a year. We do 2 podcasts a day. We sleep very little. We have every major newspaper trying to attack us and destroy us. Every social media company that tries to come after us, right? Every friend I grew up with will not talk to me except 2. My family has been divided outside of my nuclear family, praise God. My wife and I have, you know, My wife and I have a very close social circle. And you know what? We're the luckiest, most blessed people in the world. I wouldn't trade this for the world. You know why? I said what I said earlier. I mean it. I'm the same person in public that I am in private. I don't have to pretend I'm somebody different. I'm free. Are you? That's the most important question to ask.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, along those lines, I've been talking about this quite a bit lately. I've been letting people know you have to be willing to not be liked. And if you're a Christian, you have to embrace it. And that's, I love that. You can embrace the fact Jesus said they hated him, so they're going to hate you. And if people love you, then you're doing something wrong.
It's true.
It's that simple. If you as a Christian find that most of the people in society just love you, then you are not being the Christian Christ has called you to be. And that's okay if you don't want to be a real Christian. But the second you say, you know what, I really want to embrace my Christianity. I really want to be what God has called me to be. I don't want to be one of those, you know, couch potatoes. I want to actually get up and do something. Just be prepared for it and embrace it. People are going to talk bad about you. You're going to be a misogynistic, homophobic, xenophobic, bigoted racist. You know how I know? Because I'm all those things. I mean, if you go look on social media, that's me. I'm the maniac pastor here in our valley. They can't stand me. But you know what? The Bible says, blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and you say all manner of wickedness against you falsely for his name's sake. And that's what will happen. You'll be blessed.
Well, and also, I mean, that's totally true. And it's not that you get no friends. So Aristotle taught that there are three types of friendship. And we don't teach young people this at all. The first type of friendship is like commercial friendship. These are friends you might have at work, right? You're trying to accomplish some sort of aim or some sort of goal, and it's very transactional, right? The second type of friendship is a friendship where you might share some sort of a purpose. The best example that we have are sports teams, right? And those friendships can last. But the third type of friendship, Aristotle said, which is the highest form that a human being can exist, and the Bible tells us this as well, is when the two friends are not looking at each other very much because they're looking at the same ultimate purpose. And that's what all of you in this room have in common. You're all experiencing the highest level of friendship right now because all of you are looking at, man, how do I save this country? You're not worried about what people are wearing here tonight. You're not worried about social currency. That's what we need to embrace. Not the sort of, you know, oh yeah, are my friends with this person or that person? No. What are you looking at? What's your ultimate purpose? And that comes from a Greek word telos, where we get the word telescope from, which means far out in the distance. That's where we get the word teleology from as well when we talk in biblical terms. And that's where you need to really chart your course. What are we trying to do here? Are we just trying to get social media likes and trying to get people to momentarily like us? I mean, that's a shallow life. We all know that. Right. Now, it's also, you shouldn't strive to try to create discord. The Bible tells us that as well. But you should speak truth at every chance you possibly can. And you know it's going to come with a cost, obviously. You know that people are going to call you those names. And, you know, I hope that what we do at Turning Point, what we're doing on our kind of, you know, our kind of messaging tour and everything that we're doing here to try to inspire all of you that it's actually the greatest way to live. I deleted all my social media apps. You know, people come up to me, they say, Charlie, you're trending on Twitter. And I say, oh, really? It feels exactly the same as when I wasn't trending on Twitter, right? I really don't care. You know, did I say something that was true or not? And that's what I encourage all of you to do. And you will find new friends, better friends, real friends,
yes,
that aren't looking side to side, but you're all looking at that ultimate purpose together.
Yeah, I love that. That's one of the things I've talked to my family about, I've talked to my congregation about, is as we do what we're doing and we have that goal to be the two things Jesus said we are, salt and light. You know, salt preserves, light reveals, and we're going to do that. We're going to be the things Jesus called us to be, and the world has gone nuts. Like in the last 10 years, look what's gone on. The world has gone completely delusional. Now, as we seek to be what God's called us to be, I've got two areas of my life that I know are going to be solid, and that is my home and my church. We're going to come together, we're going to love one another and encourage one another and build each other up, and we're going to have this camaraderie that the world wished it had. And same thing within my home. It's going to be peaceful. We're going to have laughter. We're going to enjoy one another. And we can control those two environments. We can't control what the rest of the world's doing, but we can control those two environments, and we're going to have peace within them. I want to tell you, you said earlier that there are professors that are just miserable. You said they hate themselves, hate this country.
Yeah.
But there are some that don't.
Yeah.
We talked about one earlier, and I want to just show just a quick, not a clip, but a slide of this professor out of Portland State University. And you happen to know this person.
Yeah, Peter Boghossian. He's a really good guy. Yeah. He's not a Christian, but he's a very, very decent person.
I'm going to read a quote. This is out of an article from the Epoch Times just this afternoon, but this is what this professor said. I never once believed, nor do I now, that the purpose of instruction was to lead my students to a particular conclusion. Rather, I sought to create the conditions for rigorous thought to help them gain the tools to hunt and furrow for their own conclusions. This is why I became a teacher and why I love teaching. But over time, he argued, Portland State University, a publicly funded college, made, quote, intellectual exploration
impossible and has transformed itself into a social justice factory with a primary focus on race, victimhood, and gender. So what would you say to public school teachers and professors? Because a lot of people say, Tim, you hate teachers, you're against teachers. No, I don't hate teachers, I'm not against teachers. I don't like teachers that indoctrinate kids. I like teachers that teach children the things that this professor talked about as far as why he did what he did, why he became a teacher. So what encouragement would you give to teachers, and how can they engage and have an effect?
It's such a great question. And I just want to say first, Peter Boghossian is a liberal. I've had him on my podcast before, which I'll tell you guys how to subscribe to, which would help us out a lot. And if you guys want to listen, you guys can listen to our conversation with Peter Boghossian, which is really, really insightful and fun. And he says that as someone who is not kind of as a conservative. So yeah, look, we need to ask ourselves, what does the word education mean? So the word education is a Latin word that comes from the word to lead forth. Many of you know Socrates and his allegory of the cave, and it's hard to illustrate without actually putting it up on the screen. But he argued that most people were living in a simulation where they're staring at a wall and looking at nothing more than a projection of what the fire would cast on the wall and the shadows and the puppeteers of what people want you to watch. And that a true person is able to be liberated from outside the cave, led forth out of, into the true world, and see things actually as they are. So that word education literally means to lead forth out of the cave. And so the question should be, what is the goal then? What are we leading them towards? And so this is my big complaint against critical race theory, and also about kind of how we as conservatives have lost the entire conversation. Let's forget the word conservative. How we as constitutionalists, how we as fair and decent people have kind of lost that entire conversation is that sometimes people are like, oh yeah, you know, it's all about giving students free speech and exposure to all ideas. I'm like, where did you get that stupid idea that that's what education is all about? It's about developing character and leading them towards things that are true. It's not about getting them exposed to every awful idea that has ever been, you know, discovered. You think that we should give a fourth grader an equal hearing to eugenics as to the idea of natural rights-based philosophy? Of course not. Of course not. You think that we should give a fourth grader, you know what, we're going to teach you that white people are better than black people because we need to tell you that every single sort of viewpoint needs to be represented here. That'd be ludicrous. Instead, what teachers need to realize, and the left realized this a long time ago, that all teaching at some point is not going to be viewpoint neutral. This has always been a lie, okay? That like, oh yeah, we can like present all sides of the story and all this. Now, what Peter Boghossian is talking about is giving people the tools and getting them closer, but people's bias is always going to seep through at some point, right? What we really need to ask ourselves, the question is, are we properly exposing students to things that are consistent with the natural law and the lawgiver, or as the founding fathers would say, the laws of nature and nature's God, as it says in the Declaration of Independence? And we know this as just what we would call this as a Greek word, prudentia, prudence, common sense, but so many students are being deprived of this. And so here's a really easy way that you could teach a third grader. The most important thing a third grader can know besides knowing how to read and write. It's the most important thing, and every parent needs to teach your kid this. And it's biblical. Are human beings naturally good or naturally bad? It's the most important thing. Yeah, naturally bad. Most college students would say naturally good. When polled, they'll say naturally good. What's the significance of that question? If you think that human beings are naturally good, then all of a sudden you have to explain why things aren't working the way they should be. And they all of a sudden say it's because government isn't big enough, or it's because it's all the racism. It's because of the police. When in reality, we know it's a soul problem. We know that it's within our genetic code. It's within our programming since original sin that we are broken and we are nasty and we are brutish and short to each other, as Thomas Hobbes said in the book Leviathan in the 1500s. Now, this is the most important question that's going on in our entire civilization right now. What's the raw material you're dealing with here? You know, we're all human beings. We're the speaking beings. Okay, are you naturally inclined to do bad things or naturally inclined to do good things? And if you can't get that basic question right, then all the other political questions fall apart. And this is where I wish the American church would do a much better job of speaking out. Your church is doing an amazing job. By the way, you have a great pastor here, everybody, who's doing a very, very good job.
Thank you.
And because if you don't get that question right, then all the rest falls apart. And then finally, kind of to this about kind of what public sector teachers should do. If you have tenure, dig in and be the radical. Dig in and be like, you're not going to fire me. I'm going to teach what I want to teach. Like, you can't fire me. I'm going to use tenure against you. Okay? Now, what does that require? You're going to lose all your friends and people are going to call you names, but that tenure laws were written to protect the radicals in the 1970s and 80s. They use them against us. Let's start using them for us if you have tenure. But yeah, you're going to live an unenjoyable life as a teacher. Well, okay. Well, you have a chance to really spread goodness and truth. And I'm not saying ever to propagandize people, enlighten people. They propagandize. We bring people to the truth. By the way, if I have 20 minutes with a student, I can deprogram 20 years of lies. It takes them 20 years to build up the garbage that, like, you should focus on race and sex and color and all this. It takes so long to build up that garbage. When in reality, for us, it could take one sentence of truth to totally bring people closer to things that are eternal. And so one of the reasons why our school system, and I'll, you know, just end this part of the comment on this, our school system is so screwed up is that we don't talk about the two different types of knowledge. So there is practical knowledge, which is useful, sort of, I guess, but it changes. But then there's eternal knowledge. So practical knowledge is, for example, who's the governor of California? Gavin Newsom, for now, right? And so hopefully that will change very soon, right?
Hopefully.
That is practical knowledge. What is eternal knowledge? Eternal knowledge is wisdom, things that don't change. And students today are deprived of the knowledge of the things that don't change. And the Bible, the 66 books, one author, is an entire book of things that do not change, that can come part of your own living experience of who you are as a person. For example, what does power show you when a man has it? What's the right way to organize society? Is man meant to marry? Are you supposed to have children? Should you tell the truth? What happens when all of a sudden you are asked the question, do the ends justify the means? Where do you find answers to those questions? Not at a university. Not looking through a microscope. Not looking at a test tube. Find it in the Bible. You find it in wisdom, which is what we're not teaching our children right now.
Right, right. I want to just piggyback off what you said. To the teachers, and not just teachers, but whatever profession you find yourself in, we need to be shrewd. This is one of the things I talk about in my book is Jesus said that the people of the world are more shrewd than his own people. And the word shrewd, it simply means to find a way to make it happen. And that's what we have to do. The radical left has used those tenure laws against us. Well, why don't we use them right back? This is being shrewd. We need to find a way to make it happen. Another thing is we have to stop worrying about being nice. Okay, I said this at church on Sunday, and I had some people like, when I first said this, like, well, was Jesus nice? And people were like, well, yeah. I'm like, no, he was not. Jesus was not nice. You want to say something? Go ahead.
No, I mean, just go look at Luke 15. Like, someone go pull it up, and he literally said, I came here to divide, not to unite. It's the verse no one ever wants to talk about. I came here to turn father against son and mother against daughter, and I came here to divide the world, not unite the world. It's the verse Christians don't like to cite very much.
Yep, Luke 15, Matthew 10, both of them. Now, and also look at this. So people, somebody's like, well, no, Jesus was nice. I go, you want to bet? He went to a woman at a well, and he said, go get me your husband. And she goes, I don't have one. He goes, you've said right, because you've had five, and the dude you're living with right now, he ain't your husband. Now, was that nice? No, that wasn't nice, but it was love, because love presents people with the truth. Okay, and that's what we have to remember. We're living in a society where everybody thinks that we all have to be nice to one another, and you have to be this nice Christian. No, we don't have to be nice. We have to be truthful, and we have to be loving. And there's a big difference between truth and love and being nice.
Yeah, and also, you know, the Bible tells you don't have to be a jerk for, you know, to try to be callous. That's not what the pastor is saying. This is a really important thing, but nice comes from the word, what? To ignore.
Yeah, to ignore. Right.
And so, look, I just had my four wisdom teeth pulled a couple days ago. No swelling, no opioids, praise God, right? It's amazing how quickly we've done a turnaround. Really, truly, it's the Lord that allows me to be here. And I say that when I found out I had a tooth infection. I can't stand surgery. I think this, we actually share a dentist building here, right? If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Which I was like flashbacks to Nam as I was hearing the drilling happen. And so when I got my diagnosis, I wanted to know exactly what was happening. I wanted the doctor to tell me the truth. I don't want the doctor to be like, it's all going to work out. I don't want you to hear. No, the doctor's like, you actually have an infection in your jaw and it could get into your bloodstream. And if we don't take out your four wisdom teeth in the next couple weeks, at most, like you could end up in a hospital and dead. Now, that wasn't a nice thing to hear. I hate dentists. You're with me, right? You know what I'm talking about? But she loved me so much. She was like, you know what? If I lie to him and I tell him what he wants to hear, he could die. That's love. Love right. is being like, hey, look at the x-ray. I'm going to show you the truth as transparently as I can, right? And right. it wasn't done in a callous or a jerky way. Right. But then when I tried to squirm out of it, I was like, can I take antibiotics? Yeah, if you want to die. I was like, what? It's like, yeah, what about this? Nope. This is what has to be done. And that's kind of the, kind of an earthly, not perfect equivalent of what Jesus said. No, I'm the way, the truth, and life. Like, yeah, you can go find your own way, but if you want to go to heaven, you got to go through me. And it's like, that's not a nice thing to hear. Right? That's not pleasant, but it's the truth.
Right.
And so I completely agree.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got to get that through our minds. And I'll be talking about that more as time goes on. We don't have much time left. So I want to switch gears a tiny bit and talk about your involvement at a local school board meeting, local to you. Yeah. I'm going to show a real quick clip and then I want to talk about it. Take a look at this.
It kind of feels like I'm living in San Francisco because of all of you and your self-righteous measures that you're putting to abuse the children of this wonderful state. I'm going to have children here one day, and I sure hope people like you aren't in charge. You are defying Arizona law and measures to mask children, even though there is zero evidence to show that children are at a significant risk of catching or dying from the Chinese coronavirus. Which, by the way, I hope the Attorney General of this state acts with criminal intent against this school district for breaking the law and passing a curriculum without allowing parent input. In closing, I'm going to say this. Your time is soon up. The people of this state and this school district are rising up. There are recall measures in place. You have awoke a sleeping giant. I hope you enjoy your masked short-term future here while it still lasts. Thank you.
Thank you.
So some would say that wasn't nice. And I would agree, and I would say, you don't have to be nice. This is the truth. You're not going to be in that role anymore. I recently told our local school boards the same thing, called them out by name. You're not going to be there. You're not. Why? Because we're going to recall you. We're going to put somebody else in your seat because that's the way a democratic republic works. It's we the people. But we the people need to voice our opinions and use the role of private citizen that we have and be shrewd and make sure that we have our way, that we're the parent, we get to do what we want. So how would you encourage everybody here to get, maybe some people don't feel comfortable doing what you did.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but there's other things that people can do. How can we as a community be shrewd and start to have an effect here locally?
Yeah, and I mean, by the way, that was a fruit of the spirit of self-control. You should hear what I really think. And so that was very, down the vein. You know what I'm talking about. So, just kind of with that really quick. We have a whole school board project at Turning Point USA. It's called our school board watch list. You guys can check it out, schoolboardwatchlist.org. It's mostly an information project to empower you what's happening in local school districts. But you guys are being wonderfully led by your pastor here, so you basically know what's going on. But many other communities don't have that kind of input or guidance of what's happening. I got really irritated. And so, we have a national footprint. Millions of people watch our stuff. But I never want to be the guy that just kind of sits behind a desk and does a radio show and kind of just like tells other people what to do. I've never been that person. I was the one that went right into the Kavanaugh protests and had a lot of fun doing that. You know, I got my start getting screamed at out of restaurants, out of Antifa coming and hunting me down in the streets. That's kind of just kind of who I am, right? And so when I found out that these tyrants in my local neighborhood of Scottsdale, where we're headquartered, were masking children against the will of the voters and state law, I was like, you know what? Like, no, that's not going to happen. Like, that's not the way this works, okay? Like, no one knew who you were when no one showed up and voted. And if God gave me a platform, I'm going to come down, like, as hard as I possibly can. So we showed up with hundreds of parents at the Scottsdale Unified School District meeting. And this has basically just become like sport for me, because it really has. One of the school sport members really crossed the line with me, and I'm a Scot, and we don't forget, right? So we just we're gonna win. And so one of these jerks, he was like, yeah, you know, we need to mask children, and like all these conspiracy theorists and racists are gonna be coming to the meeting tonight. I was like, oh, really? So you want to go pick a fight with us? Like, that's fine. So four recalls are going to be underway against 4 out of 5 of the school board members at the Scottsdale Unified School District. And our political vehicle is doing a lot of this work. And just know, Turning Point Action and Turning Point PAC, but just know this is super important. Arizona is a battleground state. You guys know this. It's really important. It's in play. Can talk about the audit if you want, because that's an unrelated but somewhat related geographic thing with that. But yeah, I mean, we mobilized hundreds of parents, and here's what I learned that night. My wife gave like the best speech ever. I don't know if you guys saw it or not. It was way better than me. She spoke, and she was like, we're going to do a moment of silence for every kid that's going to commit suicide because of all of you forcibly masking children. And she just stood there silently. And then one of the guys, this is what really upset me, is one of the school board members wearing a mask started checking his computer during the moment of silence. My wife called him out and was like, sir, this is a moment of silence for the people that are about to commit suicide because of you. And it was like total mic drop moment. And yeah, and then at the 47th parent that we mobilized to the school board, and it wasn't just me, I'm not trying to take credit for it, but we have a deal where we do in Arizona, we had it last night, called Freedom Night in America, where we bring about 2,500 people in the local area of Arizona together once a month, and we talk about the local issues, we talk about the meetings we're going to show up at and the things we're going to do, and it's all at a local church that we host this meeting at, which is kind of very similar to what you do here, mm-hmm. which is just so awesome to know that you guys are doing this. And so tons of parents showed up. But anyway, the 47th parent spoke, and what I realized, and I predicted this. So my wife and I were driving afterwards. While the testimony was still going on, we were watching it on our phone. It was like 115 degrees outside. And my wife said, man, do you really think this is going to make a difference? So I said, oh, here's my prediction. I said, they've never been confronted, and they're going to break. And so all of a sudden, front page of the Arizona Republic the next morning. One of them was caught on a hot mic after the 47th parent who said something no person should ever say, an awful swear word involving our Lord and Savior, right? Being like, this is so ridiculous. Who are these awful people on an open mic and like mired in scandal, right? And it was a great lesson. Evil hates when it's confronted with light. Mm-hmm. And it says in Romans to love what is good and to hate what is evil. Right. And so we're basically in the midst of a recall of those 4 out of 5 of those clowns that voted for the mask mandate. And they have not ever experienced anything about what we're cooking up against them, because they have been allowed, like serpents in the grass, undetected, to go after our children. But I feel called, and we're doing this across the country, and we're helping in Harris County with some other pastors that are doing this. We're helping in other areas. But this is the one thing I want you guys to care about, and if I could just kind of elaborate on this. The trend is going to continue this way, where we're caring less about the international, and we're caring less about the national, and we're caring more about the local. Do you notice that? Yeah. That's a healthy thing, actually. Yes. It's a healthy thing to care about your neighborhood and your children. And I think we've actually forgot that. We thought like, oh yeah, you know, Trump on Air Force One's going to solve everything. Meanwhile, who cares about the school board, right? So I, for one, I'm like, you know what? No, I'm not going to do what we do at Turning Point and just sit idly by while the local school district that I pay taxes to is going to act like these tyrants. And so I want to know that while you guys are doing what you're doing here in your local area, in Arizona, we're leading a huge counteroffensive, and those people, their time soon's up. I'm telling you.
And what you just said was biblical. It, it, I don't know if you guys caught it, but what Charlie just said is actually a part of the Great Commission. When we look at what Jesus called us to do, he called us to deal with Jerusalem first, then Judea and Samaria, and then the uttermost parts of the earth, right? And that is when we look at our own mission individually and what we do, like for us here at 412 Church in Marietta, for those of you that, because not everybody goes here. A lot of people come here Wednesday nights for our watch, but I pastor the church that meets in this building, 412 Church in Marietta, and we look at what are we going to do in our Jerusalem, which is right here in Marietta. And then we go, okay, what about the rest of the state, Judea and Samaria? And then what about the rest of the world? And that's the problem with a lot of the churches is they've been focusing on, oh, we got to send missions. We got to send missions to Africa. And I've been part of it. I was a missionary in Indonesia. I speak Indonesian. Wow. Like I've done missions work out there. I know and I appreciate missions work. But when you can walk into the middle of a mega church here in America and say, how many of you think that gay marriage is okay? And there's like half the people raising their hands saying this is okay. How many of you think that critical race theory is a good thing, should be taught, and we should march with Black Lives Matter? And hands go up everywhere. You've got a lot of work to do in your Jerusalem.
Right.
You've got a lot of work, and you, how dare you think you can go send people to another country if you can't do the work here?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And in Jeremiah 29:7, the Lord speaks, and he says, demand the welfare of the city that I have sent you in, because your welfare is tied to the city's welfare. And so I just want to encourage all of you. The trend is actually, and this is a really interesting thing, the globalists have actually participated, in my opinion, in one of the most epic failures of a modern project. There are more countries in the world than ever before, not less. The globalist project was supposed to create less countries. Right? There were about 100 countries post-World War II. There's well over 280 now. We have countries getting out of these unilateral agreements. Brexit is one example. We are adding countries in Europe, like North Macedonia. So we have states that are looking to care more about what's happening in their local community than not. And so that should empower you, shouldn't it? Because you're like, man, D.C.'s corrupt. Sacramento's corrupt. Even the county's corrupt. But my neighborhood, I got that. That should empower you guys.
Right.
So think about it that way, because the movement the last 60 years has been to disempower you, and now all of a sudden we're seeing the trend the other way.
Right. Let me tell you, just like for here locally, Marietta, we look at the Marietta School Board. Prior to COVID, I was telling parents, you've got to wake up to what's being taught. It's being taught right here in Marietta. They're teaching our kids that they can be an infinite number of genders and all this stuff that came out of AB 329. This was several years back, is a law that was put into place right here in California, where they start teaching our kids not sex ed, but sexuality training, how to be involved in sexual experiences, all these things. The people said, not in Marietta, not in this great, it's a great conservative, and it is, it's a great conservative place to live. I love Marietta. I've been here for a long time. I've raised my kids here, got a grandkid on the way I'm going to raise around here, and it is a good place, but Here's what was happening. The Marietta School District, we actually got together with attorney Bob Tyler from Advocates for Faith and Freedom, put together a parental rights policy. We told the school district, we will advise you pro bono on how to install this policy. If anybody brings a lawsuit to the school district, we will defend you pro bono. I mean, they had no reason to not put this in. And do you know what the school board did unanimously? They voted down the parental rights policy and then instead put in policies that were the pro-LGBT policies that would reinforce these things to be taught to your kids and make sure that you, the parent, wouldn't have those rights. They voted unanimously for that. This is what we're saying is we can deal with that locally. We can deal with that. We can get new people on the school board that are going to side with the parents and grandparents. And that's what we should do. We can't worry so much about these national things. If we can't get our own backyard right, what are we doing with the rest of it?
That's right.
This is something we can do, we will do, guaranteed.
That's right.
Totally. And everyone here has more power than you realize. And so you guys want some good news? I'll give you some good news. I mean, because there's so much bad news out there. Jesus is coming soon. That is true. I agree, but Let's say some good news outside of the eternal and the divine, but are related to this. About 2 years ago, where you and I first met,
I said that we need to double our homeschooling population in America as one of the things that we need to do to try and save America. The numbers are out. So 2 years ago, if I sat here, there would be 5 million families homeschooling. There are now 10.2 million families that are homeschooling across America. Now, this is not... I want to say a couple things. Number one, if you are retired, I want to ask you to pray about becoming a mentor or becoming an assistant adjunct to a homeschooling family that maybe you're like, man, I can't teach anything. How about this? Go do the grocery shopping for that family so that they have the opportunity to homeschool their kids. And no more idle hands. No more idle hands. I get people that ask me all the time, and I'll be honest, I lose patience sometimes. This one, I really lose patience. Charlie, what do I do? I'm like, really? You think there's nothing to do right now to save the country? How many kids are you mentoring? How many homeschooling families are you assisting? Who are your school district members by name? How many FOIA requests did you file last week? What's your mayor's name, city council name? What's the local city council budget? What are they spending on this? I never knew you could do that. I'm like, yeah, okay, well, you know, let's turn off the cable television. Let's get into the weeds, right? But the homeschooling thing is awesome. So I just want to say for the parents out there that are homeschooling, we are here to help you, and I want to encourage you. So we've just launched a new program with Hillsdale College, which is terrific. That's charlieforhillsdale.com, charlieforhillsdale.com, where you guys can get the entire curriculum on American history, Aristotle, Winston Churchill, Euclidean geometry. It's a great kind of auxiliary tool to what you guys probably already have, but it's terrific. But if you're out there like, man, homeschooling's not for me. I can't do it. It's too hard. I get it. My parents were that way. Then here's my challenge to you. If you're a grandparent or a parent, this is the most important thing that I'm going to ask you to do here besides getting your kids to love the Lord. Take 1 hour a week where you turn off all the screens and you teach your kids what you learned that week from one of these Hillsdale courses or something you read. If you're not doing that, then you have given your child over to other people. 1 hour a week will change your child's life. Where it's dedicated for that. Call it the Liberty Hour. Now, some of you are like, we're already doing that. We do that every night. Great. Then this is not for you. But I bet there's someone here right now where you're like, man, we really could do that. Instead of watching a Netflix series or a Hulu special before the kids run into their video games, say, nope, I'm in charge. Dinner's over. We all sit at the table now. We're going to do an hour about George Washington. You're like, man, I couldn't do 5 minutes on it. Well, go to charlie4hillsdale.com and you could go take one of these courses. And they're easy to go through, like they're 30 minutes each. And so in your idle time, what are you doing? I want you to take inventory of your idle time. Are you watching, you know, movies that really don't make you any wiser? Like, do you have big action films or whatever? Or are you all of a sudden like, man, I really want to learn more about the founding of this country. I want to learn more about Abraham Lincoln. If all of you are like, man, I know all that stuff. All right, go learn about the greatest man to live in the 20th century, Winston Churchill. I guarantee you there's something you don't know about Churchill. He was amazing. He was the most incredible leader for a time that God put him in a perfect place to save Western civilization. You want to talk about someone who was hated before and after he was a leader? Go learn about his prudence, his decision-making. He wrote 50 books. He's a great role model for young people to go after. He was born in a life of luxury, served in several wars. I could go on. The point is this, is that the most important thing we could do to like influence our local area is go influence your kids and your grandkids. And all of you guys now have the power and the tools to do that. And so I encourage all of you to do that Liberty Hour every single week. This is what my parents did for me. People said, Charlie, how'd you get to be so conservative? Were you homeschooled? Nope. Private school? Nope. Public school. But my parents, every couple nights would be like, hey, we're going to talk about American history. We're going to talk about geography. We're going to talk about what's right in the world. And all that nonsense at school would always just be like, yeah, this is all garbage. Because I know it's true. 1 hour a week could change your kid's life.
Yeah. You know, another thing to consider about homeschooling, because I homeschooled my daughter. I never wanted to homeschool. And I kind of, when my kids were growing up, I always thought, like, the homeschool kids are weird.
That's totally, like, I had the same stigma, to be perfectly honest.
That's how I thought, like, oh man. But what I realized now, we ended up homeschooling her, and it was the best decision we ever made. And I could tell you this, the homeschooled kids, they're going to be the leaders of this next generation. Yeah.
So can I say something?
Yeah.
And so, We have the vision cast. 2050 headline of the New York Times. Surprising right turn in America, attributable to homeschooling explosion during the coronavirus pandemic. That's the America we're fighting for, isn't it?
Right.
I want all of a sudden the liberals to be like, 10 million families are homeschooling. You understand how much 10 million families are, right? You're talking about 2 million, 2 to 3 kids per family. That's, and by the way, just so you know, like 98% of kids that are homeschooled end up being conservative Republican voters, okay? There's like 2% that are like these weird hippie liberals in like northern Vermont. But like, look, if you're homeschooling your kids, it's like you're not one of those people, right? And so if we now get home, just so you guys know, and this is another thing, you have to be prepared, right? What does it say? That Satan is prowling the earth like a lion, right, looking for people to devour and destroy. The next big push is going to be about criminalizing homeschooling. It's coming very right. soon. It's going to come sooner. I'm telling you right now, because they're going to look a year from now, if we all of a sudden get 12 to 15 million families homeschooling, they're going to do the math. They're going to be like, man, we can't bring in enough Afghan refugees to offset this. Like we can't bring in enough Ilhan Omars that hate the country, right? Where you're looking at all of a sudden, in 2035, a voting age, the most conservative generation in American history. And so I want to empower you and encourage you. You might be like, man, what can I do? If you're homeschooling or helping a homeschooling family, you are playing a role in developing a generation that will help save the country.
Right, right. We do have homeschools groups that meet right here at the church. If you want more information, just go to our webpage, 412marietta.com. You can check it out there. We'd love to have you get your kids into homeschool. It's so important that we do that. Okay, what would you say are, as you look at the public school system, what would you say are the top three issues, and how do we get involved in helping to correct it?
Yeah, number one is the lack, I mean, it's so obvious. You say public school?
Public school.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the lack of God and the lack of objective truth, but you really wouldn't expect that, would you? So, but then number two, which is so important, which is how we teach history. I love history. And if you're a Christian, you should love history because the Bible's a historical document. These things happened. Okay, these are real things. There was a King Hezekiah. There was a King David. There was a King Solomon. So you should love history. And history can be a wonderful guide for all of us. The way that we teach American history in our public schools is evil. And I could go toe-to-toe with any one of the scholars on the other side on the 1619 Project and the actual founding. You know, the late Harry Jaffa, who actually taught right at the Claremont Institute, not far from here at Claremont McKenna College, he said that people can know three things really, really well. I want, in 20 years from now, to know the American founding really, really well. I spend hours a day learning about Jonathan Mayhew and George Whitefield and Chaucer and the American founders and Hamilton and Madison and Jay and Adams and Monroe. These were brilliant, spirit-filled people, everybody, that gave us a gift of a self-governing, natural law, natural rights-based constitutional republic that is so unique that taking it for granted is something that I believe goes against the biblical commandment to appreciate what has been given to you that is good and noble and true. And so history is number two. And then number three is something that, you know, you've had the courage to speak out on here, but it's the sexual degeneracy stuff that's being taught in the school. I mean, you know, I spoke at a church group, and I won't tell you where, of young kids. They were teenagers. And at a church, and I told them, I said, you know, you got to save yourself for marriage. And it was silent. Like silent. It was like guilty silence. And these were like 16, 17, and 18 year olds of kids that were like looking down and all around. And I was like, whoa, we got a real problem. And this is something that the church needs to continue to speak openly about. Mm-hmm. The church needs to do a better job. I have a whole list of things the church needs to do a better job of celebrating and creating almost this goal of marriage. I'll be honest. I got married in May. 95% of comments I got from Christians about marriage were negative. 95%. Like, man, it's hard. It's tough. Like, you getting ready to put on your death suit? Like, you know, it was like, man, this is awful to hear about. It's actually been amazing, right? I love being married. And the real, you know, my real Christian mentors like Rob McCoy and others were so wonderful about it. But so many kids don't look at marriage as the ideal because they see nothing but divorce and brokenness and abuse and all of this. And I'm not saying that there aren't reasons for that. That's not my role. But let's celebrate it a little bit more, right? Like, let's lift it up. Let's say, like, this is what we want young people to strive for, right? And to have a bunch of kids and to want to flourish in your community. And so that's really where a lot of the sexual degeneracy stuff comes from, just so you know, is that a lot of kids fall into it because they're not given the ideal to strive for. And that comes with the transgenderism, that comes with the outward hedonism that comes into our schools. And look, I've just become more socially conservative in local years. I've always been socially conservative, but I've just become more so because honestly, it's just the way God wants you to live, which is, you know, one man, one woman marriage, obviously pro-life through and through, but also just the way we talk about these things from a social norm standpoint. And like, this is one of the other reasons why parents shouldn't give your kids phones. Have you looked at Instagram? It is a degenerate platform. And by the way, like, I've got to be really careful the way I say this. See, I'm not always careful, but I got to be careful because I will offend people if I say this. Like young Christian women, like what are you posting? Like you understand what men think of, you know what, I didn't even say I have to say it, but when men see that, they think so lowly of you. They look at you as an object. I'm just so proud of my wife for what she puts on social media as an incredibly beautiful person and has been so, you know, careful about that. And so that's why kids should just get off of social media because, you know, that's, you're training your mind to look at people in a way that is so sinful and lustful and terrible. And so you don't have to live in that kind of environment. And so anyway, I know I'm kind of going over my time on this, but those are the three things I would say. The lack of God, which is obvious, the way we teach American history, which is terrible, and then kind of the sexual degeneracy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, my daughter always said, modest is hottest. And that's true.
I agree. I want... I want more Christians to believe that.
Yeah. You know, we as Christians, we have to come to the determination, do we believe that what is in here is true? And that's the thing, is if we believe that what is in here is true and that God is not a liar, Psalm 127 talks about our kids. It says that our kids are like arrows in the hands of a warrior. And happy is a man who has a quiver with one or two in there. It's not what it says, is it? Full. I'm the oldest. Right? I'm the oldest of my mother's eight children.
It's amazing.
Eight, and I can tell you, my dad said, because there's four boys, four girls. My dad said, you know what, Tim? We get older, something happens, and we all live local. We all love each other. We all vote the same. We all actually enjoy Thanksgiving together. Like this is family is awesome to us. And my dad said, you know, when we get older, something happens to me. I got my boys. Something happens to mom. She's got the girls. And you know what, Tim? I will never ever be lonely.
And so I got to tell you a story, and it's from someone that you would all recognize, but I won't breach his confidence. And it's a story that he told me firsthand that has always resonated with me. And so he was hunting on Thanksgiving Day in Florida with his son, and they went off the side of the road to like go to a convenience store or something. I want to think working on Thanksgiving Day to go to a convenience store. And he checks out and he's starting to talk to the woman who's kind of scanning all of the good, you know, everything that's going on. And he says, oh, how's your day going? She says, she's like, you know, later I'm having Thanksgiving and, you know, I got nine kids and, you know, I got, you know, one of them's in prison and like, you know, one of them's got a baby mama here and one of them's got here and like, you know, all this all over here. He's like, wow. And he's like, you're working on Thanksgiving. And she goes on and on and on. She's like, I know. I'm super blessed. I know, nine kids. I'm the luckiest person in the world. He's like, oh my gosh, I've been looking at the world all wrong. It's like, that's the real like earthly prize we have, which is like have major families and be able to be fruitful and multiply. Like no one cares how many houses you have. Like those people are miserable. I know a lot of them. The people with the largest families are the happiest people that I know. And we lost this. Like that used to be America in the 1960s and 1970s, which is a country that had lots of children and valued things that were eternal and that mattered. And instead we made a bargain. We're like, okay, we're going to have like one of each. Like we're picking out like, you know, tiling or something. I don't know. Like, oh yeah, I'm gonna have one of each. Like, okay, that's weird. And it's like, and by the way, you know, I come from two kid family. It's fine. But like, we're gonna bring in a bunch of immigrants to do the jobs because that we don't want to do, right? because that's the way we're going to design society, because we're not going to have enough kids to be able to live the luxury we want. And now we're reaping the benefits of that. And so, look, the conservative movement, we need to be the big family movement. We need to be like, you know what? No, we're going to pay you to have children, lots of children, because that's an objective moral good.
Yeah, it's one of the things. Kiara Mapp, when we did her interview, she wants, how many kids, Kiara? How many kids do you want to have?
Five.
There you go. You got to love that. That is awesome. We need more young people to have that mentality that I want big family. And I'm telling you, as the oldest of eight kids, big family is awesome.
And I just love seeing parents with tons of kids and the chaos and the whole thing. And I know you're all like, oh, Charlie, you don't know it's your parent. You're like, you're probably right. Yeah. But you know what I know when I see that? I see a parent that's taking responsibility. I see intergenerational love. I see things being passed down. I see things that are going to last. I see the God wants you to live that way. And I see something that is beautiful. And I don't feel that way when I see like a 38-year-old that's like some like pharmaceutical executive that works for Pfizer that pulls up with like a big car. I'm like, you're a jerk. Like, you know, like seriously, I'm like, I think so lowly of you. Like, go, you know, where's the guy with seven kids? Like, that guy's a hero in my book.
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't agree more, because that describes my dad, and he is my hero. All right, so people want to connect well with you. You've got a podcast. Yes. Like, how can people subscribe to that and hear more from you every day?
So for those of you that have heard me speak before, you kind of know that I do one shameless plug every single speech. So look, big tech censorship is a major issue. As you well know, Google just came out today, by the way, with their new anti-racist equity guidelines of what they're teaching all their employees, that white people are the worst thing ever. I mean, we have these companies have way too much power, right? So they have slated me and our show, not just Google, but many others, for potential cancellation. But the way that could be pushed back against is when people independently, especially at gatherings like this, subscribe to our program. It's free of charge. I know it sounds silly and super self-promotional. So everyone has a phone. And if you have an Apple smartphone, there's a podcast app. And you take it out and you just type in Charlie Kirk Show. And you hit subscribe. It's, you're right there. You're subscribed. Thank you.
Go ahead and do it right
and
now.
If you guys would do, thank you so much. And I know some of you already subscribed. We do two podcasts a day. So let me try to pique your curiosity if I haven't already. We have Dr. Lee Merritt on our podcast that talks about the vaccine, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. By the way, we are one of the few podcasts. We didn't get into the vaccine thing. I know you're on YouTube, so I got to be careful. But like, we talk. I'm not getting vaccinated, and I will not get vaccinated at gunpoint. And we're one of the few podcasts that talk about that. We talk about what's going on with school choice and with school boards. We talk about what's going on in Afghanistan. So if that piques your interest, we are a daily news source. It is family friendly. We never swear. We are never unseemly in any way whatsoever. Now, we do mock the left a little bit, but yeah, I think you guys will make some allowances for that. But no, if you guys would do that, that's great. And in closing with that, if you don't know how to subscribe, you're like, man, I don't know how to subscribe to this podcast. I see an 8-year-old somewhere that would be able to guide you through that entire process. It would bless us a lot. And so thank you guys. It really does help us. Amen.
Well, Charlie, I want to thank you for coming out. I know you've got a busy schedule. You got a lot to do. You're actually here in California. Going to be doing a lot of things.
Yeah, we're doing a Recall Gavin Newsom rally tomorrow, which is great. And We're all over the place. I'm going back and forth to Yorba Linda tomorrow, which home of Richard Nixon, and then back to Rancho Santa Fe, and then we're going. Oh, I have an event in Anaheim on Sunday with Mark Levin, Dennis Prager, and Larry Elder. That's going to be a lot of fun. So we're all over the place. And I want to say, I'll just say this in closing. I live in Arizona, but I love California. I love you guys. I come here a lot. I pay way too much in California income tax because I come here so often. And it's kind of funny. So this is how tyrannical the California Franchise Tax Board is. They come and send us a letter and they're like, okay, we're going to tax you as a percentage of what your podcast listenership is. And so since we're so popular in California, I have to pay 25% of all of our net proceeds, because 25% of our listeners are Californians, that they send us a bill based on our – that's literally what we have to do. So as a California resident, I pay a lot in California taxes. So please don't give up on California. You guys have probably already voted, and you voted correctly, obviously. Yes, on all the ballots, right? But more importantly than that, let's double that homeschooling population again. Reject this idea of nihilism and cynicism.
I'm telling you, everybody, we're about to turn a spiritual corner. We are turning a corner in our country right now, and you are all leaders in that. And I am so blessed to fight alongside of you every single day, to show up to school board meetings. I'm going on a college campus tour. Ready for this? University of Oregon. Pray for me. Boise State University. University of Vermont. Intercessory prayer meeting that night. I'm going to send you the date, okay? Vermont. Like it's going to be something else. We're going to University of Minnesota. University of Michigan. We're going to Clemson. We're going to Alabama. Not to mention, I am doing, from now to the end of the year, 125 other speeches in addition to all of our podcasts and our radio shows. We are not slowing down, everybody, because we have a country to save, and I'm honored to be fighting alongside all of you. God bless you guys. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our program, you can do so at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless. Speak to you soon.